We welcome back to the program from The Athletic, the lovely and talented Steve Buckley. Buck, good afternoon.
It's been a long time since I've been referred to as lovely and talented, so I'm very excited about that.
Well, I would hope so. How did your pup make out today?
Oh, she's fine. Roxy's 14 and a half. And so obviously she's a lab, and we're at the point now where it's strictly making sure she's happy and having a good quality of life. And so I bring her in every month or so just to have her looked at. She's had a little kidney issue, but she's, you know, this is, my friend and I have been raising dogs now since 96. The first one lived to be 15, the next two, 14 years and 8 months or so. And Roxy's 14 and a half. So a lot of it's luck, but you know, I think we do a pretty good job with the dogs.
I would say you're doing something right. I've got an 11 and a half year old. Can I bring her down?
just give them lots of attention, lots of walks, and moderate the diet. I mean, and get lucky. I mean, there's just some very simple things you do. And that I'm fortunate in that my social life is there's lots of people in and out of the house for groups and whatnot. And the dogs get lots of attention. I think that's very important for dogs. In fact, there's one of them barking at the door right now.
Weighing in. I like that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to hear that. I want to talk about a number of your recent pieces. And a terrific one on last night's Celtics opener and how absolutely right it was to have Jaylen Brown honoring Bill Russell.
I thought it was brilliant. You know, and it's not often that I go to the team and say bravo in person, but I was talking to Christian Megliola, who's their big PR guy, media relations and communications, and I said that struck the right note, as I wrote in the piece in The Athletic. You know, you could have had a bunch of old guys out there, a bunch of old, and there's people like me and Dan Shaughnessy, and that we write sometimes eloquently, sometimes not, about what's going on with the team. But to have a 25-year-old there in Jaylen, who is from this generation, speak with his own eloquence about Bill Russell and having met Bill Russell and what Bill Russell means to him, that's going to strike a much more important note with his generation than anything I can ladle out. And I'm not being self-ageist here, if that's the right way to put it, but sometimes I have a problem, and this is where I become the get-off-my-lawn guy. I have a problem with people in his age group who don't seem to know anything that happened 10 minutes ago. And the only way to be aware of what the history is and understand and appreciate and be wary of history is to know it. And that's the lesson he imparted last night.
Yeah, and he gets it. And it's not simply, as you pointed out, the basketball knowledge and appreciating what Bill Russell did on the court, but appreciating and understanding the larger story of Bill Russell's life, which is what he did away from basketball.
And what he experienced and was not shy, and I'm talking about Bill Russell, and what he was not shy about saying, hey, this is what happened with me and I don't like it. And there were a lot of African-American athletes back then who were told by the teams, listen, don't make a big deal. We'll fix it. Don't make a big deal out of this, you know, and so forth. And, you know, Dick O'Connell with the Red Sox did some wonderful, wonderful work recruiting minority players on the Red Sox. But prior to his coming around and Bill Mahoney being the Neil Mahoney being the farm director, the Red Sox had a bad record of recruiting African-American players. And that history is right there. We need to know all this, and we need to know what Bill Russell went through. It's important.
Speaking of guys with an understanding of history, you wrote about Bill Belichick, who certainly has a reverence for those who came before him, whether it was tying George Halas's career victory mark or appreciating those guys in the Ring of Honor at Cleveland, the Marion Motleys, the Paul Browns of the world.
Yeah, you know what it reveals or confirms is probably a better word. You know, Bill Belichick went to Wesleyan. He played lacrosse. He didn't play football. His father played football a bit with the Detroit Lions way back in the 1930s and was a longtime assistant coach at Navy, and he knew George Halas and all that. Well, one can imagine Bill Belichick, not a football player, but certainly a devotee and a student of football. One can imagine him during his lacrosse days at Wesleyan reading all these weighty tomes on baseball and football and so forth, because, by the way, his knowledge of baseball is pretty good also. And that's what I did when I was a kid, you know, absent the ability to coach or the interest in coaching. And I have an appreciation for, and it sort of goes back to what we were just talking about. I mean, Bill Belichick, as a young person, had a deep and rich appreciation of football's history, and not just the statistical stuff, but clearly he's talking about Paul Brown and George Halas, and Paul Brown recruiting African-American players for the newly formed Cleveland Browns when they went to the NFL. And what he didn't say, and I'm pretty sure George Halas was coaching the, remember the whole Brian Piccolo movie?
I Am Third.
Thank you, with Gale Sayers, and how they became roommates, and it was the first time a black and a white roommates, and that was George Halas who put them together, if you go by the movie.
Right.
So good for Bill for knowing that history, and good for him being comfortable in his skin to share it.
And I remember it reminded me of when he was on, I think it was ESPN a couple of years ago, when they were looking at the greatest players in the history of the NFL for the 100th anniversary, and he was so good at that, and it was a side of him that we don't often see.
Yeah, and far be it from me to compare Bill Belichick with Richard Nixon, and all your listeners are like, what? But I'll never forget, and I lived through the Nixon years, and you know, boo, he must resign and all that. But I do remember after he resigned the presidency, he did a very long interview with Roy Firestone on ESPN. And man, the guy knew his baseball. And, you know, we've all seen and heard the stories about politicians trying to talk sports and failing miserably. There are a few presidents who really do and did know baseball. George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, certainly Richard Nixon, Harry Truman, Bess Truman, believe it or not, was a big Kansas City Royals fan in her last days. So I think that stuff's kind of cool, and I like it when those people share legitimate sports knowledge.
We're talking with Steve Buckley here on Downtown. Well, you got to experience a little bit of hockey history up close and personal at 2 Yale Road in Arlington. What a wonderful piece with the Chief.
Yeah, they asked me, the Athletic is doing a thing on the top 99 players in the modern era, and they included Johnny Busick because he had those great seasons post-1967, you know, 50 goals and all that. And I interviewed the Chief for like a couple of hours, and when he started talking about the house he lived in when he was traded to the Bruins, he shared a house in Arlington, Mass. With Bronco Horvath and Stasiak, and they were all line mates. And he kept telling me over and over, we'd sit up there at night in the kitchen in the living room, smoke cigars, and all we talked about was line play and cross-checking and the whole, you know, back-checking and all that. And so I drove out to the house and met the owner and took some pictures. And it's really, you wouldn't think that a nondescript little house in Arlington, kind of a leafy suburb, it's not too far from where I live, that would play a small but non-insignificant role in Bruins history. So I decided to write the piece on Johnny Busick through the lens of that little house they shared, which was a fun story for me to do.
All right, I have to tell you my Johnny Busick story. I think you appreciate this.
Please,
I was in my, I guess, late 20s, teaching, coaching high school baseball, and several of us would make trips down to see a bunch of games in Boston, try to work as many as we could into a sports weekend. And at the time, Bruce Crowder was coaching up here at Maine as an assistant to Sean Walsh. And he would give us his tickets to see the Bruins when we went down, and it turned out they were Johnny Busick's tickets. So one night, I think we had been at a Holy Cross football game that ran a little long, and then we had to scamper to get to the Garden for a hockey game. And when they got there, our seats were gone. They had given our seats away because it was after 7 o'clock. But one of the guys said, well, we're not done yet. We will get in to see this game. We ended up going upstairs, I think on the third floor of the old Garden. There was a receptionist in there who looked like, you remember Selma from the Night Court TV series?
Oh, I certainly do, yes.
It looked like her. She had the cigarette with the impossibly long ash, and she had the headsets on. And my friend Jim Walsh knocked on the glass.
I think that was Florence Halep, wasn't it?
Yes, Florence Halep, yes. Eventually, she opened the window and said, what do you want? And my friend said, we need to talk to Johnny Busick. She said, he's on the air. He was doing the games on TV 38 at the time. She closed the window. We stayed. He would knock on the door every couple of minutes. Finally, she opened the door and said, "They're in a commercial. You have 2 minutes." She handed him the headset. My friend goes, "Chief, it's Walshy." Tells him the story. "We've come down from Maine. Bruce Crowder gave us your seats. Can we get in?" Blah, blah, blah. He takes off the headsets. He looks at us and says, "We're all set." A minute later, a security guard came down with press passes, and we watched the game from the press box. So, make a long story only slightly shorter, we all chipped in, and we sent Johnny Busick a dozen lobsters to thank him for that. Well, after that, every year, we would hear from Johnny Busick, "If you guys want tickets, I can get them for you."
Yeah. Johnny, to use one of your favorite words, is a lovely man.
Yes.
And he's well into his 80s now. He's a widower. He's remarried. And he just walks around. You know, he has that cane that he got from Bronco Horvath. And for those who may not do a deep dive into the story, Bronco Horvath, who was his line mate, who had a very ornate cane with a greyhound at the top of it, used to tell Busick that when I go, you know, someday you're going to need a cane too. And when Bronco Horvath died, he willed his cane to Johnny Busick. And now, if you go to the piece, and I'm not here to, you know, sell subscriptions, but if you go to the piece, I took a picture of Busick holding that cane that was willed to him by Bronco Horvath. And that's when you write stories like that, you're like, "Oh my God, they pay me for this. This is so awesome."
Well, it's a wonderful story, and I'll shill for it. It's worth the price of the subscription. Just for that alone, it's a wonderful piece, and that picture is great.
Thank you very much. It was a fun piece to write.
Of all the, and you've talked to so many legendary figures through the years, who was the one that gave you the biggest thrill, maybe because you were a fan when you were a kid?
It's a very easy answer. I could have supplied the answer three words into your sentence. Bobby Orr. Mm-hmm. And because I was such a big Bruins fan when I was a kid, I met him when I was about 14. I got his autograph. I still have it in a book upstairs. And years later, I got to know him a little bit. Then I got to know him a little bit better. And I'll never forget when I came out and did the whole coming out thing back in 2011. He called me on the air when I did a radio show, and then he called me a week later. Invited me to a suite that he was at with a bunch of business people. I still, to this day, get a little nervous when I'm around Bobby Orr, because just the relationship he has with the Bruins and his iconic status in the game and just his general personality. Now, you know, we mentioned Bill Russell. Glenn Ordway and I did an entire show with Bill Russell about 15 years ago, and obviously, I was very respectful of Bill Russell, but I didn't really see Bill Russell play in person. He retired in 69. I went to my first game the 69-70 season, so I never physically saw Russell play. I saw Orr play a gazillion times, and so Orr is the one. But I should add, Yastrzemski is another one. I still get a little nervous around Yaz because he can be very... he's a very nice guy, but he can be a little stern too. And he's not one to, you know, wax poetic and anecdotal about everything. And so he's one, you know, and I would put Russell in there too. And it's just that, like I said, I didn't see Russell play, but the iconic players from the 60s and 70s still get me a little off my game.
I understand completely. Steve Buckley of The Athletic. Buck, thanks as always for making time for us this afternoon. And we'll talk with you again before too long.
I look forward to it. Take care.
Steve Buckley on Downtown. Check out the piece. Get the subscription to The Athletic. And wonderful. And also the wonderful piece last night on Jaylen Brown, too.